The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, the mindfulness of mind, or breathing in, experiencing the mind, breathing out, experiencing the mind. And I'm in, you know, what the exactly citta mind is, I'm arguing that we can't really know what the Buddha had in mind. But I wanted to read you part of the definition in the Pali Text Society Dictionary. So the more or less the standard Pali English dictionary. It was written over 100 years ago now, but it's still an excellent resource for understanding this. And they have a wonderful little entry for citta, the word that we're mostly translating as mind. It says, the meaning of citta is best understood when explaining it by expressions familiar to us. As, for example, with all my heart and soul. I have no heart to do it. Blessed are the pure in heart. Singleness of heart. All of which emphasize the emotional and connotative side more than it's the mental and rational side. It may therefore be rendered mood, disposition, state of mind. So some people prefer to translate this word citta as heart or as heart-mind. It kind of touches into the emotional side of all this more than the word mind might even feel a little bit dis-emotional, not so connected to our emotional life. And also when some people like me treat mind and awareness almost as synonymous sometimes as we get into deeper meditation, that also might kind of lend itself to the idea that we're kind of being removed a little bit from the embodied emotional life that we have. And which may be a little unfortunate. Maybe this, whatever citta is, whatever the mind is, whatever awareness is, maybe it's a rich world that includes our emotionality to some, to important ways. And so in the step 7 and 8 of mindfulness of breathing, it's looking at the mental activities, recognizing the mental activities in the mind, and then relaxing those mental activities. Or tranquilizing or calming them, which is that movement or opening, having the mind become open, not contracted. And as I said earlier, the mind that's preoccupied, mind gets hijacked. Attention gets hijacked by our desires, by our aversions, by our doubts, by our restlessness, our anxiety. And it's almost like the times are like a black hole that attention falls into, and it doesn't really come out. There isn't like we step back and get the bigger picture. We get swept away in our preoccupations, our thoughts, our fantasies, the stories, our resentments, all these kinds of inner world of what goes on. And these are all mental activities that hijack awareness. And there are other mental activities that enable awareness or open the mind that doesn't hijack but rather enhances the quality of the mind. So the Buddha made the distinction between mental factors that do the closing the mind, those that open, is a distinction between what's called the five hindrances and the seven factors of awakening. The five hindrances are strong sensual desire, lust, craving, aversion, ill will, hostility when it's strong, sloth and torpor, lethargy, resistance, and then agitation, restlessness, anxiety, regrets, kind of agitated states of preoccupation, and then confusion, uncertainty, doubt that can really... We get lost in a rabbit hole of doubt and confusion. And these can have very strong gravitational pulls, and we get pulled into them. They can come sometimes with a lot of authority, like this is really important, I have to be involved in this. But the consequence is that attention gets hijacked. And for the Buddha, when attention gets hijacked like this, he calls that a loss of wisdom, a blindness, an obstruction to the mind, a covering over of the mind, makes the mind fragile and brittle and hard. Whereas the other that opens the seven factors of awakening, those are awareness, mindfulness itself, a clarity of mind that's sometimes called investigation, effort, joy, tranquility, samadhi, concentration, and equanimity. And all those can work together as a whole, and each of those can operate singularly to really kind of open the mind up and open the inner quality of the inner life. And this is where the emotional side really comes to play. I mean, one of the most sublime, beautiful emotions that's hard for the people who haven't experienced it to appreciate is the quality of equanimity. It's a beautiful kind of feeling. Tranquility has a kind of almost an emotional quality to it. It's really strong and embodied and broad and has a warmth and clarity to it, stillness and peacefulness. Joy, of course, seems emotional. Samadhi is an integration, a bringing together of all aspects of our life, including the emotional. What these seven factors of awakening are, they are characteristics or supports for awareness itself, for mindfulness itself. And so the more that they operate together with awareness, they tend to open awareness, strengthen awareness. They create vision. They support wisdom. They remove obstructions. They remove the coverings that keeps us from seeing things clearly. And they make the mind malleable, soft, workable, ready to do the work, receptive maybe, to do work. And so here we're talking about mental activities, kind of, that represent this divide between becoming more closed or more open. And it's possible to cultivate each of the seven factors of awakening by itself, to be attuned to them and learn to recognize them and support them. And it's also they tend to grow in the wake of really emphasizing mindfulness, attention here, but being attentive that the mindfulness, whatever way we practice it, in and of itself is not a closing activity. That is, there isn't some other factors that come along with mindfulness, like striving or expectation or pushing or contracting around the mindfulness that begins moving it in the direction of the hindrances, closing down. So this ability to track the mind state allows us to protect the mindfulness from being hijacked that way. And so we can try, the mindfulness, now it's getting closed more as I try hard, and maybe I can find a way to be more open, more relaxed. And this simple movement from being more closed to being more open, what yesterday I used for Gil Fronsdal, the technical terms, ouch and ah, what involves more stress or more suffering, more discomfort, and what goes in the opposite direction. To be able to see that simple divide is one of the primary characteristics of the second factor of awakening. As I said, usually called investigation, but is really a clarity of mind that sees this valence, sees this distinction between the ouch and the ah, being closed and being open, becoming blind or lost in our preoccupations and opening up and having vision and clarity of what's happening. So this is one of the great advantages of beginning to tune into the mind state. And as I said in the meditation, it's fascinating, it's fascinating because very valuable and even healing, because just being attentive to that simple movement can free us from having to get caught up in the details of what's happening, whether it's right or wrong, or am I good and bad person because of what I'm doing this way, and you can have the worst thought that any preoccupation that anybody's ever happened in the history of humanity. And in this mind state thing, it doesn't really matter that it's the worst thought anybody's ever had. It just matters that you recognize that you closed down, you got tight, and that there's an opportunity then just to allow yourself to open and not, and just let it go, let it kind of recede and move towards the openness of mind. And so that simple movement, that's the direction to go, can make the practice in some ways much simpler and very forgiving. So the mind state. And that's what we're doing today. And we will continue tomorrow. And then starting on Monday, the idea is to go through these seven factors of awakening. And hopefully, as we kind of linger in this area of the mind state, it's such an important one. And then we'll go on from there. And so thank you very much. And I look forward to our time together tomorrow.